I was uncomfortable on the spot. I didn't know the situation, a pretty conservative little church, and I didn't know how to pray what I thought was properly into the situation. And so what I did was I started tying my little grandson's shoes and said, "I'm busy, leave me alone." you're really getting encouraged by the pastoral staff, right? And I come out of this saying, you know, and so I didn't move in the situation. And I want you to know right off the top, before I read the scripture, before I start, I'm not coming to you in a defeated, woe is me, I'm a failure and a doomed sort of person. You know what? God quickly showed me, here's a teaching moment for you, Randy. Here's a place to learn something. And I was drawn back to this word. I was drawn back to the fact that even in this about the gifts, I guess this is my key point in where we're going to go, is we can teach for as long and as hard and as well as we want. We can bring in all the people that we want to teach about gifts or teach about any kind of biblical principles, but we got to act on them. Right? Good teaching is just good teaching. Somebody can teach me how to build a house if I never put a hammer to a nail. The house isn't going to get built, but I got a head full of knowledge. I can tell everybody else how to build their house. But, you know, you got to practically do some things. So I want to look at Samuel chapter 14, 1 Samuel chapter 14, and just kind of look at this a little bit, and I'm going to try to walk through it. I see we don't have no clock in this church. That's not a good thing for a guy like me that talks too much. So I'm going to try to use that phone as a guideline, but I'm not promising anything. My wife told me to be quick, too. 1 Samuel chapter 14, start at the beginning. One day Jonathan said to the young man who carried his armor, "Come on, let's go over to where the Philistines have their outpost." But Jonathan did not tell his father what he was doing. Meanwhile, Saul and his 600 men were camped on the outskirts of Gibeah around the pomegranate tree at Migron. Among Saul's men was Ahijah, the priest who was wearing the linen ephod. Ahijah was the son of Eliatub, Ichabod's brother. Eliatub was the son of Phinehas and the grandson of Eli, the priest of the Lord, who served at Shiloh. No one realized that Jonathan had left the Israelite camp. To reach the Philistine outpost, Jonathan had to go down between two rocky cliffs that were called Bozez and Senah. The cliff on the north was in front of Michmash, and the one on the south was in front of Geba. "Let's go across to see those pagans," Jonathan said to his armor bearer. "Perhaps the Lord will help us, for nothing can hinder the Lord. He can win a battle whether he has many warriors or only a few." "Do what you think is best," the youth replied. "I'm with you completely, whatever you decide." "All right, then," Jonathan told them, "we will cross over and let them see us. If they say to us, 'Stay where you are, or we'll kill you,' then we'll stop and not go up to them. But if they say, 'Come on up and fight,' then we'll go up. This will be the Lord's sign that he will help us defeat them." When the Philistines saw them coming, they shouted, "Look, the Hebrews are crawling out of their holes." Then they shouted to Jonathan, "Come on up here and we'll teach you a lesson." "Come on up, climb right behind me," Jonathan said to his armor bearer, "for the Lord will help us defeat them." So they climbed up using both hands and feet and arms, and the Philistines fell back as Jonathan and his armor bearer killed them right and left. They killed about 20 men in all, and their bodies were scattered over about a half an acre. Suddenly panic broke out in the Philistine army, both in the camp and in the field, including even the outposts and raiding parties. And just then an earthquake struck, and everyone was terrified. Saul's lookouts in Gibeah saw a strange sight. The vast army of the Philistines began to melt away in every direction. "Find out who isn't here," Saul ordered, and when they checked, they found out that Jonathan and his armor-bearer were gone. Then Saul shouted to Ahijah, "Bring the ephod here," for at that time Ahijah was wearing the ephod in front of the Israelites. While Saul was talking to the priest, the shouting and confusion in the Philistine camp grew louder and louder. So Saul said to Ahijah, "Never mind, let's get going." And Saul and his 600 men rushed out to battle and found the Philistines killing each other. There was terrible confusion everywhere. Even the Hebrews had gone over to the Philistine army, revolted, and joined in with Saul, Jonathan, and the rest of the Israelites. Likewise, the men who were hiding in hills joined the chase when they saw that the Philistines were running away. So the Lord saved Israel that day, and the battle continued to rage even out beyond Beth Aven. And may the Lord add a blessing to the reading of his word. So I want you to see in this, I'm going to use the old pastoral trick. I've got all my points, and they all start with P. And I had to stretch it a bit in some places, but but you'll be amazed by my genius in doing so. As I told you, I listened to a bunch of messages. It was a bit of a compilation of different thoughts and different ideas from some of these guys. So if any of you listen to stuff online, you say, hey, he's stealing stuff. Yeah, somewhat. I really ask God to show. I've come to some piece. The Lord, you know, sometimes He gives guys like me, older guys, time to be able to hear the Word. And it doesn't have to be stale bread, you know what I mean? It could be fresh and new to us. And so it's not like I go and, you know, I saw something on TV about some guy goes online and just copies messages. I wouldn't ever dare to do that. But I do take from other people's stuff. I don't try to claim any of this as all my own. So having said that, one of the guys I listened to said, I entitled this because I heard two of the three messages I listened to both used the same, one of the same definitions and used the same examples. And it's to attempt and expect. And I thought about that as we're using our gifts, as we're learning about the gifts, is exactly that, to attempt and expect. Because, like I said, we can teach as much as we want. We can do all this teaching. And I love how Mark and Jana especially use the practical method of teaching us how to, you know, speak prophetic words, speak words of knowledge and words of wisdom, you know, and got us to practice those things. And we can do that, you know, here in the body. But if we don't actually go out and attempt these things and then have an expectation that something might happen, you're going to end up like me, in a place where there's a guy that needs somebody to pray with him, with a real spirit-filled attitude to pray, and you know, you say, oh, man, I don't think I can, you know, I don't want to, and it really bothered me when I come home. I go back to this, and I just want you to know how this troubled me, only because after I got thinking about it, I thought, you know, my expectation should be that I pray for this guy and see healing to come to pass. I don't know in the place that he had a bunch of guys prayed with him and that, and I don't know what that church really believes in the place of healing, like God's divine hand. You know, a lot of conservative churches, you know, they kind of say they believe in healing. I really believe that God wants to heal people. And I knew that, and I missed an opportunity to see God move in a mighty way. And I just, you know, I again would say to you, I'm not defeated, I'm not depressed, I'm just saying I missed something here. I missed an opportunity. I believe God give us another opportunity in that place where He's going to take care of the situation, right? I don't want anyone walking around thinking, oh yeah, you know, we're losers, we missed something. That's not the case. But if we don't even make an attempt, you know, things aren't going to happen, and we need to have some expectation. We need to believe that, you know, when we speak, we've been taught these things. We speak them forth, and good things can happen. So the one guy talked about this, attempt is actually action in the place of uncertainty. That's what the definition of attempt is. When you're not really certain, but you're going to try anyways. You're going to make an attempt. And he said expect is to anticipate and to keep a sharp lookout for. I like that. I've been kind of sticking to that. Keep a sharp lookout for. Do I anticipate? Where is it that, you know, ever since that happened, especially, I've been looking and saying in different situations, things that I wouldn't normally. Walking around work and, you know, slugging an old brake drum around or something and just moaning because it's too hot, and then saying to myself, yeah, but what if God wants to do something? Just as I'm dragging this thing out, what if some truck driver goes by that, I don't know, just God would give him a word. I want to anticipate. I want to expect something to happen. And that's how I think we need to be. Both places I heard them say, attempt big things from God and expect big things from God. I don't know that, you know, we do that often enough. I don't know that we attempt big things for God or that we expect them. I just putting it out there. We get this teaching. We listen, we listen, we listen, we go home, and we come back the next week and listen to another message. But through the week, are we attempting? Are we expecting God to do things? So in that, I want to walk through this whole story. And for any of you that ever listen to me speak, you know, this is my neighborhood. I like that. I don't say that to say this is going to be real good. I'm just saying this. I like this stuff. I love biblical stories. I just believe that God has such a depth for us in biblical stories. There's things, there's lessons to be learned. There's deep truths in these things. They're not just good stories, but they are great stories. And I'm a guy, and Diane would tell you I like my you know, Rambo type stuff. I watch those kind of movies, and so this stuff's great. I killed 20 guys. Ooh, yeah. You know, that's not. Just forget I said that. But I like these stories anyway. So walk through this a little bit. And the first part, this very first verse, one day Jonathan said to the young man, carried his armor, come on and let's go over and to where the Philistines have their outpost. Jonathan had a plan. He had an idea. He had a thought. Jonathan knew that there was a plan of God. And if you read down through the story, it says Saul's sitting with 600 men under the pomegranate tree. Somewhere I read about this, the pomegranate tree was the tree of victory. You sat under the tree, the pomegranate tree, and that was kind of like a sign of victory. You were winning. But Saul hadn't really won anything. The Philistines were standing, you know, around and about them and had a bigger army. And Saul's just sitting in a place of not even bothering to try or to think about it. He just figures victory's his because he's Saul and he's the king. And Jonathan, it says, he had an idea. He had a thought. He had a plan. He decided that he knew the plan that God had for Israel and he was going to act on it. And I want you to encourage you again in that, you know, sometimes that's all we get. It's like a little seed, you know. I don't know about anybody else. This is where I come out in this thing. That all it said, all he had was this sense, this feeling that we need to go check out what the Philistines are up to. Let's go look at the outpost, right? And it doesn't say that there was anything else at that point, right? Jonathan said, let's go over and to where the Philistines have their outpost. And now, if you're anything like me, this is where I get in trouble with this attempt and expect and all that. It's because I really like God to put like a real full blueprint out for me. You know what I mean? He says to you, you know, go do this. And so now I start saying, okay, I'm going to do this, but I need to know what's the fruit, what's the result, how's it going to happen, what's going to, and this will be, you know, the next step. A couple of weeks ago, I was lamenting to one of our fellow members, actually to Louise, and I was complaining a little bit, trying to actually get her to say, you're a good man, Randy. And she didn't, you know, in her wisdom, right? Because I was saying, you know, I get somebody comes to visit me quite often, and I'm tired. I'm not getting anywhere. I'm not doing, you know, nothing happens. Every week we meet, and every week nothing happens, and it's discouraging. I'm tired, right? Wish it would go away. And Louise said to me, you know what? I know who that person is, and I think maybe he's just lonely. Wow. Wow. That changed everything about what I think and do in that situation. You know that? That changed everything. I got to tell you, Louis, you don't know how simple word. That's what I thought. Attempt and try. Speak things forth. Move out and stuff. She told me, maybe he's lonely. And all of a sudden, I went home and I said, oh, God, I can sit for an hour with a lonely man. I didn't see the picture. My picture in this thing was always that I got to fix this guy. I gotta, you know, God's not going to be happy with me because every week he leaves in the same state, basically. Every week he leaves, basically, without redemption and without healing and deliverance and the things that he needs. And every week I get more discouraged, saying, man, that's another hour I can't get back in my life and nothing happened. And that's how I was dealing with this stuff. And then Louise said, I think the guy's lonely. Can I tell you what a word with depth and authority that was for me? That thing just pierced my heart. And now I hear a knock on my door and I still say, oh man, I'm not all the way there. But I'm quickly able to say, oh, it's a lonely guy. God called me to sit with a lonely guy. He didn't necessarily say to me, do all these great things. I don't know if God's playing all this. Jonathan said, I think we got to go check out the Philistines. We got to go have a look. That's all. Just said, let's go have a look. He had a plan, he had an idea, and he was obedient to it. He just decided, you know, I don't have to necessarily know it. And I think as people here, we need to understand that. That's what's our church mandate, right, is to know the plan as a church to bless Niagara Falls and the nations, right? And somehow we have to, you know, just understand that God calls us into certain situations, place at the storefront. I'm sure that some of you go down to the storefront week after week. People come in and they drink coffee and eat breakfast and they have donuts and sometimes eat the whole bowl of snacks. and you get discouraged. At times you maybe get discouraged. You say, man, we ain't doing nothing, man. All we're doing is buying bags of chips for, you know, Joe the barber to eat all day. Right? I just want to say that I believe that, you know, there's something in having that plan, having seed thought of what God would say that we're to do, and just allow Him to paint the rest of the picture, not to get bent on what's the blueprint, what's the way of doing this. And for those of us that are struggling in those places too, this is the time as a church that walks in these places to call up those prophetic words that are upon you. You know, if you're struggling in those places, you know, remember, people, you know, we have a lot of that. That can happen, too, in the prophetic church. You get lots of prophetic words, words of wisdom, different things like that. And you tend to, you know, at times you tend to say, oh, that doesn't apply to me. Yeah, man, well, that was nice. And even in the moment, it makes you feel good. Hey, this is, yeah, he said I'm going to preach to the nations, you know. And you just kind of put it away because it doesn't happen a week later. I got some that I keep always saying to Diana, you know, like, they're way on the back shelf. I got to dig out the shelf sometimes and look in behind because there's promises that were made there. And there's some stuff there, if I was to tell you, you'd even say to me, ah, you nuts, Randy? You buying that? Yeah, I am buying it. I'm buying it. The prophetic word that was on me is yet to come to truth. And I think we need to call those up and to recognize them. Second thing I want you to see is verse 6. It said, let's go across to see those pagans. Jonathan said, perhaps the Lord will help us. Huh. Perhaps the Lord will help us. Now, I want you to know about that, too. I want to talk just for a second about the perhaps. Perhaps the Lord will help us. You know, sometimes in the same thing in the plan, it's not a big thundering voice that speaks to us. It's not a clarity that says, thus and thus will happen. You should do this. You should go this way. You should walk that way. You should pray in a certain manner. Many times it's not very clear. It's not too sure. There's not a blueprint for us. And we need to take our perhaps into the battle with us. You know? Sometimes, you know, I know we're supposed to, you know, this may be a theological wreck here I'm making, but I just believe that as individuals, sometimes we don't go into situations completely faith-filled, right? That's why we as a church body, we have discussions. Do the storefront, we do Syrian refugees, those sort of things. Not everybody's faith-filled for those things. Sometimes we have to take our perhaps into those things. Sometimes we have to say, you know, I believe that God's capable. I expect God to operate in this thing. And perhaps He's going to, you know, show me the plan and the purpose as I move forth in it. So I want to encourage you just quickly in that we take our perhaps into the battle. We take the perhaps in and the tentative many times turns into a faith-filled situation. I've told the story a number of times. I'm sure you get tired of these, but the kind of stories I remember and I like was Francis Fragapan, who's a great prophetic voice, great teacher, one of the guys I listen to in these little study times I have. I go online, I listen to his teaching. And I remember years ago him talking about it, that he went to a church, a very prophetic church, and actually had a big conga line of prophetic speakers. They get you in a line and you come up, and it was part of like you had said, Janet, in the church in England there, where they would get, you know, you would come with an expectation that somebody had a word, had a gift of some kind. So it was that kind of church. So they had a prophetic line. Francis Fragapan said for a long time, I don't know how long it was, for ages, he would get up in line every week and go into the prophetic line saying, I got a word. I got a prophetic word. And as the line moved along and got closer to the front, he'd go sit down. Right? He'd give up and he'd go sit down. And he said, the thing was that while he's in the line, he said, the enemy was constantly battering him, saying, you got no word. What are you trying to do? Listen to that guy. Oh, he's got a good word. Man, you got nothing like that. You got no word. You can't speak for God. And he'd end up going sitting down. And as he put it, the enemy's an equal opportunity enemy. As soon as he sat down, he'd say, hey, you loser, can't even spit out a simple word. so godly, you can't even speak. Gave you a prophetic word and you're afraid to pass it out, right? So finally one week he said he got up and got in line. He said, and you know, he gets close to the front again, and all of a sudden he starts to walk out of line, and he said two church bouncers come and grabbed him. Big muscle bound kind of Daryl kind of guys, right? And anyways, they come and grabbed him, they stuck him back in line and said, "You're given a prophetic word." Right? You're given a prophetic word. So he ended up getting up, given a prophetic word, and as he said, and I quote off of him, I'm not making this up, he quoted and said, you know, I got up there and he said it was just a mess. It was a disaster. He said, "I think I actually said the enemy's going to win." You know? That was my prophetic word. But he said, after he sat down, he said all these people started coming up to him, clapping him on the back and congratulating him, saying, "Way to go, brother, you spoke the prophetic word. Way to go. Oh, God bless you, man. You tried. You gave the word forth, right?" And now here's a man who has a gift of prophetic words to the nations. I mean, he travels all over the world. But the point was that he tried, that he took an attempt, he took a step. He didn't have the whole of the plan. He didn't know, you know, everything that was there for him. He had a perhaps. He said, "If I get in line, perhaps God will bless this thing that I have to say." And he didn't do it in any normal, like I told you. There was no faith-filled ministry to this. He was in line. The bouncers had to push him back in. So I just, I'd encourage your perhaps. The third thing is, here's where I show my great intellect, is that the word I used for the third one was apostasy. Now, paucity meaning a little in number, a weakness, as it were. And it said in verse 6 that this is what Jonathan said, he can win a battle whether he has many warriors or only a few. I think that's another one that we need to recognize and remember. I know, kind of like to put it almost as growing up a bit in this church. Because we even since I've been here, we kind of ebbed and flowed and on the right side, going up again. Many times God's been speaking things. And I know myself, sometimes I go home and I say to Diane, "We're just a little church. I don't know if we can do this. We're just a little church." And as people, we tend to do that, right? God speaks to you about something and it seems pretty great to you. And yet, you know, we want to say, "Oh, I'm just, you know, a little schmo. I'm not an elder in the church. I'm not a pastor. I'm not a teacher. I'm not really capable of this." And so we kind of shy away from it. And yet, we know what the Word says. The Word says he can win whether he has many or a few. In Deuteronomy 32 and 30, it says, "One can chase 1,000, two can put 10,000 to flight." You know, I've been pondering this portion in this section, especially when I read that again, when I kind of looked up that verse, and it said one can cause 1,000 and 2 10,000, right? Like, do you ever really consider that? Like, do you ever really consider that? Or do we just read that and say, "Yeah, that's nice, yeah, big God, yeah, that's nice"? I started thinking about that. I actually spent this week, and I was thinking about it. I was like, we have this big empty parking lot. They park transport trucks all in the back of this parking lot. And I started, one day I was out there poking around, and I started looking. I was thinking, wow, I wonder how many people could fit in that parking lot. And just by a word, I could run them all off. And claiming that, and I'm not trying to say this, I'm not looking for some weird stuff. I was trying to put this into a perspective and trying to get a faith, an expectation, to attempt and expect. Because the Word of God says that can happen. That we can send 10,000 to flight. Two people praying together can send 10,000 to flight. And somehow I just felt encouraged. We need to understand that. We need to not minimize the authority and the power that's with us. When God goes into battle with us, there's nothing that's impossible. We're going in alone, and that's a scary thought. But when God's with us, you know what? Those two guys, Jonathan and his armor bearer, if you go back into chapter 13, it'll tell you the Philistines were pretty bright guys in some areas, in this area of warfare. They got all the blacksmiths. I don't know what they did to them. It says there was no blacksmiths in Israel. So I don't know if they killed them, they took them back as their slaves, whatever they did. There was no blacksmiths. So in the Israeli army, there were two swords. Saul had one and Jonathan had the other. That's all. They had no swords. So it says that they had farm implements. So Jonathan says to this guy, climb up this craggy hill with me to where the Philistines are camped, where there's all kinds of them, a lot more than two. He says, climb up this hill with me. We're going to go to battle. I got a sword. Like, bring your garden hoe with you, and we're going to beat these guys up. Right? Now, can you pitch this? That's why I like these stories. I don't know anybody. Nobody reads these stories like me, I don't think. I love this. I could just see this picture. These two guys climbing up the hill. This guy's got this, you know, like a rake or something attached to his belt. And, oh, get them Philistines. And he did. He bought it. Like he was climbing the hill. How many of us would climb that hill? Right? How many of us would say, yeah, right on, Jonathan. Yeah, like, wait a minute. Let me get my, you know, little garden shovel, and yeah, we'll do some damage to Philistines. that's a neat story. I like that. But that was the truth. They had only one sword amongst them. So I got to assume that they got to the top of the hill, and it tells us that, you know, they started fighting, and Jonathan killed guys right away and must have thrown them a sword. Hey, here, get rid of the garden hole. I got a sword from a Philistine, right? But you don't know that going up the hill, right? I mean, Jonathan tell you that. That don't mean nothing to me. Yeah, good story for you, John. You got the sword. I'm the guy with the hoe. you're gonna get me a sword. Well, I ain't so sure. Anyways, remember that. God's in the fight. Anything's possible. I think that's, as a church, we got to get hold of that. I think, I don't know, I told you, I'm preaching to myself a lot here, so don't take offense if I say, you know, you and as a church, because this is a lesson I've been coming through out of this. This is good for me. Next point was that he had a partner, that whole thing of the armor bearer. He had a partner, and that's a good thing. When we're walking out in gifts, and we're walking out in new territory, we're walking out in big things, we're going to attempt the big things, we're going to have an expectation for big things, it's good to have a partner. It's good to have somebody you can bounce these things off. I like the answer the armor bearer had. Like I told you, he says, climb up the hill, I got a sword, you got nothing, you got a rake or a shovel or something, come on up the hill. What do you think? Good idea? The armor bearer says, do whatever you think is best. Or in the New American Standard, I liked it better because he said, do whatever it is that's on your heart. Where did I have that? Somewhere. Yeah. Do all that is in your heart. That's what he said. Do all that is in your heart, and I'm with you. I'm going to go with you. A lot of times, stuff like that comes up, and it's a big picture thing, right? It's like, oh, I don't know if we can, you know, I don't know if we can do this. I don't think we can get this accomplished. I don't, you know, I'm just not sure we're going to be able to, you know, manage this. And then, you know, somehow God sees something in your heart and says, I think you ought to do this, right? And so you're making progress, right? Saying, okay, I think, you know, maybe I will. Maybe I'll go pray for my next-door neighbor who's mean and cantankerous, but I'm going to go over anyways. I'm going to pray with her. And then immediately, it's that thing again where the enemy comes and he says, oh, it's just your idea. That's just your thinking. You churchies, you're always trying to fix everybody. It's just one of your ideas. But 1 Corinthians 2 and 16 says that we have the mind of Christ. Again, got to start taking the word and planting it and holding on to it. We have the mind of Christ. So when thoughts like that come in and say, you know, you should try this, you should do this, you should maybe go in this place, instead of saying, well, yeah, but, you know, it's just some goofy idea I got from somewhere I, you know, had tacos last night and it made me, you know, think stupid or something, we start saying, no, I got the mind of Christ. This is something that I believe could be true. And then, having said that, it's good to have somebody with you, a faithful person with you, to share those things with, to bounce those things off. At least that's my belief. It's good to have somebody that you can share it. And having said that, make sure it's a faithful person, okay? I told this story before years ago. A young guy went to church with us, and we were kind of growing him up in things of God. We were really excited. He was growing and moving. And come out of a real seedy background, a lot of difficult situations. And, you know, I don't know what you'd call him, a weak-willed kind of guy in certain areas. So anyways, after a year or so, and he's serving God, and he's moving forward, and all of a sudden one day he knocks on my door, he comes in, and he says, oh, you know what, brother, I met a woman. He says, I'm in my middle 30s, never had a girlfriend or anything. I met a woman. He says, I'm going to move in with her. He said, what do you think of that? Why do you think so? Whether any of you want to judge or misjudge or whatever. I said, I think that's the wrong thing to do, brother. I think the Word of God tells us that, you know, we should be wed. We should, you know, you don't move in. You know, this is my counsel, right? No, he said, well, you know, he said, you know, he says, I've been to five other people in this church, he says, and they all told me the same thing. I said, well, God bless you. I said, God bless our church, you know. So about a week later, he comes over. He says, well, I'm moving in with my girlfriend. And I said, oh, man. I said, you know, six people, I said, that told you, you know, you're serving God. We're trying to tell you to start counsel. Oh, yeah, he says, but I found one guy. He says, I found one guy. Oh, Big Joe, he told me it's all about love. He says, that's the Word of God, all about love. He says, so go love your girlfriend, move in. And so he did. So he did. And, you know, I'm not trying to claim anything. That thing all ended badly. And I'm not claiming the wrath of God or anything like that. All I'm trying to say is that, you know, seek faith-filled people. When you go, you know, it's easy to go around, you know, you got to really practice this, not to go around and find the person that's going to agree with you. When you're, you know, Daryl, he rubs me the wrong way. So then I go find somebody that I know. That's not hard to find. No. That was very unfair. It'd be very difficult to find someone that thought that at Daryl. But, you know, I'd go searching for that. If that's, you know, that's where you can go. And you don't do that. When you got a plan and a purpose, especially in that instance, when you got something that's kind of odd, that's off the wall, that maybe seems a little different, that's, you know, you think it's a God thing. You got it first in your heart. And it's, you know, I'm sure, Elsa Marie and Fred, when you guys went to Burundi, there must have been some sense in your heart in those days of, man, I'm going to pull up my whole family and you know, move on. And there must have been some points, maybe there isn't. So you're looking at me like, no, you had never had a moment's doubt. Ruined my whole message. But I'm thinking, you know, you must have sought counsel of some godly people. People that would encourage and come around. You didn't go to the first person that you knew that was going to say, are you nuts? Like, you know, you look for faith-filled people. So that would be my point is just, you know, try to find faithful people and get them to support you, encourage you, stand with you in these things. Next point, I'm almost done. Verses 8 to 10, it said that, all right, then Jonathan told them, we'll cross over and let them see us. If they say to us, stay where you are or we'll kill you, then we'll stop and not go up to them. But if they say, come on up and fight, then we'll go up and this will be the Lord's sign that he will help us defeat them. So what I wanted to look at just for a little bit there is the fact that Jonathan was not presumptuous in anything he did, right? He sought after a sign from God. Even in the midst of this thing, he was still seeking. He's, you know, climbing the hill, and he took no presumption that, you know, now I'm halfway up the hill. It must be of God. It must be okay. I'm just going to keep marching regardless of what. He kept seeking after God. See, Saul, it said, his father was sitting under a pomegranate tree somewhere, just relaxing, saying, I'm the king, and life's good, and those Philistines will probably fall over dead just because I'm the king. I mean, that's kind of how I see his attitude being. And Jonathan never did that. Jonathan, even in the midst of this big occasion, this big trial he was going through, he still sought after God. He still was asking him. He said, you know, I want to see what God is saying in this thing. He continued to look to God for signs. And I say that to you in that as we walk in these gifts, as we start to move in certain areas of our gifting, as it were, there is that place where presumptuousness can come in. You know, where if we're not pressing into God, where we're not saying, God, could you really, you know, speak to me again in this area, we can go off on, you know, just, I got a word for everybody. You ever been in those meetings? And I remember going to a church meeting one time, and this guy, there was like, you know, 20 people in the room, and he said, I got a fresh word for everybody in the room. Fresh word for everybody in the room. And he had a fresh word, but, you know, I feel like it was presumptuous. I feel like it wasn't, you know, it wasn't necessarily from God. It was a fresh word. And that happens. And you know, I was thinking especially of this whole story of Samson. I remember that anybody read anything about Samson. Samson had all these, the Spirit of the Lord would come upon Samson. And Samson got presumptuous with the gift. If you read the stories, it's another book that's good stories, but there was a presumptuousness to Samson. Times when he pulled the city gates out and he just went and climbed up on top of a hill and parked them there and just said, "Look at me, I'm Samson, I can pull out your city gates." And there was no purpose to it. There was no object to doing it other than showing I'm muscular and God blessed me with strength. And sometimes we can end up getting in that place, and I really don't want to spend a lot of time there because I don't think that's a big issue per se. I don't want to accuse anybody. I'm just saying be careful not to get presumptuous, to always be pressing in, always asking God, am I in line? Am I in the right place? Is this the word for this person? Is this, you know, because sometimes that's, you know, one of the things I've kind of tried to learn over the years and still practicing in is you get a word, and for me it's like a hot potato. It's like, you know, the first guy that comes to the door is going to get that word. So I got to get rid of it because God gave me this word, right? And if I get rid of it, he'll give me another one, right? And you got to be careful because, you know, then all of a sudden, and it's happened. I don't know if it happened to anybody else, or the rest of you saints, but it's happened to me. And I've given a word to somebody, and you know, it's like it left my mouth, and oh man, it's a good word, but it wasn't for Elsa Marie. And about, you know, a day or two later, all of a sudden someone comes along and, can I, like, use the same word? Because I really think it's for this person, you know. I think I missed who it was for. So just be cautious on that. Last one. Aren't you happy? The last one is, he gave him a plethora. I could have used people, but I thought I'd show my wisdom and say a plethora. In verses 21 and 22, even the Hebrews who had gone over to the Philistine army revolted and joined in with Saul, Jonathan, and the rest of the Israelites. Likewise, the men who were hiding in the hills joined the chase when they saw the Philistines running away. There was a bunch of Israelites during this time saw the battle was going the Philistines' way rather than the Israelites, so they went over to their side of the army. Went and joined up with the Philistines, and they said, we're going to fight with them now. And then there was others, if you read again in chapter 13, I think it was, it said that these guys went and hid in caves. They found caves, they found holes in the ground and all those sort of things, and they hid from the Philistine army. There were Israelites that hid. And so at this point, when Jonathan went up and started, hacking up these guys, and Saul and his army came, and they started winning and beating up guys, all of a sudden it says all these Israelites started moving in, right? All these guys that were on the Philistine camp, they said, oh, now the Israelites are winning. I'm switching sides. I'm back. I'm an Israelite again, right? And all these guys that were in caves and holes said, hey, safe to come out. They're winning. And they came out. And it's funny because we laugh about that too. But you know what? That's if we think about that, when we're authentic, when we're people who are walking in these places of gifts, when we're moving in those places, when we're people who are attempting and expecting, people will come. You know what I mean? And we laugh and we say, oh, that's, you know, sounds, you know, all these Israelites were hiding and they were, you know, changing sides and all that sort of thing. But I was an interesting thought I had in that was, it never said anywhere there was a punishment. Like that, it wasn't like they came back and they said, yeah, you can join, but you're going to be slaves or servants or anything else. They just embraced them. They let them back into the fight. And I just thought of it was us as a church and as a people, it's the same sort of thing. There's going to be backslidden people. When they see authentic Christianity happen, when they see people who are praying for people and seeing results and are seeing people who are willing to move out in their gifts and ask God and expect God to move, there's going to be people who long ago left the church saying, God, he just doesn't work anymore. You know, I don't know how you know about people you know, but I'm not even sure what, when you ask them, why aren't you going to church? They don't even really have a good answer for you. Just, I tried that, it didn't work. And the point is that I believe that as we walk in those places, as we step out in places of victory, that people are going to recognize the authenticity of God in us, and they're going to come back. They're going to come back to the Lord. And when they come back, we don't want to be those who said, you quit on us. You know, we just embrace them. We just say, come on back in. You're part of the club, as it were. You're loved and cared for by Jesus. Just the same stuff as kind of like you said this morning, Jared. I was thinking when you said that about all the guys working overtime, right? And the blessing came at the end, and it's kind of like that happened to David. When David went out and they had this great battle and they won and they brought all the spoil back, and when they brought back the spoil, it said that the guys that were with David and had kept going on, they said, well, the guys that stayed behind aren't getting any of the spoil. You know, we fought for it, man. It'd be like you going in the lunchroom and saying, you know, Jerry, you don't get no beer and pop. You didn't work no overtime, man. We're keeping it all. In fact, if there's extra, we're taking it home. Right? And at the time, David said, that's never going to happen. Everybody embraced, everybody gets a portion of this thing that God's given to us. And that's kind of what we need to just keep in mind in our authenticity, in our walk out, in our moving in the gifts that people, I believe, are going to start to come back. They're going to see the victory in the house, and they're going to say, I want to be part of that. And when they do that, we embrace them. That we say, we love you, man. We just encourage you back in. So with that, I just want you to know again that we need to walk in those places. I found it interesting when I read that Jonathan didn't do any cave visitation, right? Jonathan didn't go knock on doors. Jonathan walked in the things of God, and in the picture of who he was and what he was, people came and served again. So, Father, we just thank you for your word on this morning. Father, we would desire to be people who would attempt and expect, Father, as you speak. Father, as you show us things, as you reveal to us your plans and your purposes for this city, as you give to us places within our heart that we even perceive that you want to work, Father, that you even drop a seed of plan or purpose into our hearts, Father, that we would be people who would be quick to move and to react and to